Berak Mem Aleph Pasik Nun Aleph. Okay, last time we were learning that the 7 years of plenty started, and Yosef gathered all the food from all over Egypt, and he stored it in a way that the food, the grain shouldn't rot. And like we said, it got to a point that they couldn't even count it anymore. And then the last thing we learned was Yosef gave birth to two sons before the hunger year started. And we learned that you can't have relations during the hunger years, and we learned how did Levi have children. We're going to go further now. Now, Pasuk Nun Aleph says, what were the names of the two boys? Vayikra Yosef Eshem HaBechor Menashe. Yosef called the firstborn son Menashe. Now, we mentioned last week there is an opinion that says Menashe and Ephraim were twins. But even they're twins, there's an older one and a younger one.
They were twins?
One opinion says they were twins. Now, the opinion, the first name he called the son, the name of the firstborn Menashe. Why did he call him Menashe? Kineshani alakim is kol amali, because Hashem made me forget all my hardships. Ve'esko beisavi, and all of my, the house of my father. Now, obviously, it doesn't mean. Okay. We'll give in to you.
No, you want it?
No, it's fine. So it says that Yosef, that God forbid, he forgot about his father's house in a negative way. But what he did was, Yosef forgot all the hardships of his father's house. Meaning the way the brothers sold him as a slave. Now Yosef understood the reason for all that. So once you understand the reason for all the things that happen, it's not a hardship anymore, because he understood that there was for a purpose, that he should become the king of Egypt, and he should be able to save the world, basically, at that time. So not, God forbid, that he forgot his father's house in a negative way, you know, I don't want to have anything to do with my father's house. He forgot all the problems of his father's house. I want to say the next pasuk, because then we can discuss both things together. Veshem Hasheni called him Ephraim, and the second one's name he called Ephraim. Why? Ki Ephrani alakim be'eretzoni, because God made me fruitful. Ephraim comes to the word peri, fruit, pre. God made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. So he called two sons. Menashe was that he forgot everything that happened. And Ephraim is because God made him fruitful in the land of his suffering. Now, later on in Chumash, when we learn the Psukim later on in Chumash, we know, everybody knows, the classic story when Yaakov was blessing Yosef's two children, Menashe and Ephraim. And he crossed his hands. And he put his right hand on Ephraim, and his left hand on Menashe. And Yosef says, hey, this is the firstborn. He says, I know all about it, but Ephraim is going to be greater. This is what happens later. So the obvious question over here, and this is important to understand now, if Ephraim is more important than Menashe, why wasn't he born first? After all, there is a Torah advantage of a firstborn.
Yosef was more important than his other brother, why he didn't?
He was firstborn of Rachel, of the main wife of Yaakov. He was the firstborn. Now, the question is, we know in Torah the firstborn has a certain greatness that the other children don't have. So if Ephraim is greater than Menashe, so why was Taka Menashe born first? Why wasn't Ephraim born first? And, you know, what's going on over here? You know, Menashe's older, but Ephraim's greater.
Is the same reason why Esau was born first?
Which, no, not really. We'll soon see. Now, in order to understand this, we have to understand about the names of the person. Because the name of the person, as the Baal Shem Tov said, brings out the entire essence of the person. The name of something in Torah, the Hebrew name of something, brings out the entire essence of it, it's the lifeline of the thing. Menashe and Ephraim represent two aspects in a Jew. When a neshama comes into the world, when a neshama is born, which Menashe is fine being born, and especially if they're twins, which means it's one thing split into two, basically it refers to a Jew coming into the world for two purposes. The ultimate purpose is Ephraim, but in order to come to Ephraim, you first need the level of Menashe. Because if you don't have Menashe, then you can't have Ephraim. In other words, Menashe is born first, because in serving God, first you have to do the level of Menashe. But the ultimate purpose is Ephraim and not Menashe. What does this mean in simple English? Simple English, it means very simply. When you name somebody Menashe, that God made me forget my father, the suffering from my father's house, that itself is a remembrance. That itself is remembering my father's house. When Menashe is there, what does Menashe mean? I forgot my father's house. That itself is the remembrance of the father's house. Because that's what you're saying. I forgot my father's house. What does this mean? Let's get practical. The purpose of a neshama coming into a body, into the world, is to create in this world a home for God. That's the purpose of a neshama, to create a dira betachteinim, a dwelling place for God in this world. That is the ultimate purpose of a neshama, to come into the world, to spread godliness around the world. The problem is, sometimes the neshama gets so involved in the world, they forget what the purpose is. They forget God. It's like they tell the classic stories about a person that was very poor, and he heard that in a certain island, there's diamonds all over the street. So the guy thought, oh, this is the answer to my problem. I'm going to go to that island. I'm going to come get all the diamonds. He sells whatever he didn't have, and he takes the boat and he goes to the island, and as soon as he comes to the island, he sees the place is full of diamonds. And he says, my God, I'm a rich man, you know? So he picks up the diamonds, but he's hungry. He goes into a store and he says, okay, I want the best food, and I'm a rich man. There's no problem with money. He comes to pay. The guy looks, he gives him diamonds. He says, you know, keep the change. He says, sir, here, diamonds are worthless. Diamonds are worthless. There's no currency here of diamonds. What's the currency? Fish. Fish is the currency. So he said, diamond is garnished, it's worthless. So the guy, okay, he doesn't have money, he's broke, he has diamonds, but he needs to buy fish. And to make a long story short, he started a fish business, and he became very wealthy, and he got a ton of fish. No, it's either fish or meat, one of the two. But he got a lot of fish, and he became a very wealthy man. He became a very wealthy man. He had storehouses and storehouses of fish. And finally he decides it's time to go home to spread the wealth with his family, to go back to his wife and kids. So he sends a message that I'm coming home and I'm a very wealthy man. I want the whole city to come and greet me at the port. So his wife gets the letter, Baruch Hashem, she's excited. She has a rich husband now, and the whole city is very excited for the new rich friend that they have. And the whole city comes. But the problem was the journey from the island took a few months, and there was no refrigeration. So the fish started stinking and smelling. And as the fish, the boats are coming closer to port, the smell gets worse and worse. It got to a point that it stunk so bad that all the friends left the port. They couldn't take the smell anymore. Nebuch, the only ones left was his wife and kids. And he comes to the port, and he comes off the boat, and he's all excited. He tells his wife, I'm rich, I have boats and boats of fish. So she tells him, maybe where you came from, fish is something, but over here, fashtunken the fish, smelly fish, it is worthless. And they say that this is a mashal, that the neshama is told by God to come down into the world to collect mitzvahs, diamonds. And the neshama is told that down here in this world, there's tons of mitzvahs that you can get. You can't get in the other country. You can't get it upstairs. You can only get it down here. And the neshama's purpose is to come down to collect diamonds to bring back home. But the problem is sometimes the neshama gets lost in this worldly thing, and they get so involved with the fashtunka and the fish that by the time they go back up, they realize that all the diamonds they were supposed to gather, they didn't get. So the ultimate purpose of a Jew coming into the world is the level of Ephraim. Ki Ephrani Elokim, that God may be fruitful in the land of my suffering, in the land of my affliction, which for a neshama to be in the body is a suffering, because it doesn't see God, it doesn't feel God, it doesn't know God. So for a neshama, this is the land of affliction. The ultimate goal is Ephraim, that a Jew should spread Yiddishkeit of Torah and Mitzvahs in this world. But in order for that to happen, that you shouldn't forget the purpose, you need Menashe. What does Menashe say? That you shouldn't forget where you came from. You shouldn't forget the purpose of creation. So therefore, when you're speaking about the birth of Menashe and Ephraim, first you need Menashe, that you shouldn't forget where you're coming from, and only then can you be Ephraim, can you be successful.
Menashe in Arabic means to forget.
Well, the Pasuk here says, God made me forget.
No, but the real word...
Right, well, whatever. Forget. So the ultimate purpose is Ephraim. Therefore, Yaakov Avinu put his right hand on Ephraim, because that's the ultimate purpose. So why was Menashe the firstborn? Because in order to have Ephraim's success, you need to have the level of Menashe, not to forget where you came from. And that's how Chassidus explains why Menashe, the Rebbe explains in the Nesicha, that Menashe comes first, because that has to be the primary, I mean the original thing. You don't forget where you came from. And then you're able to spread out.
Sometimes you talk about, when you talk about neshama, you talk about high, like there's neshama, there's a high neshama that comes down. And so how is that in relationship to, if Hashem is one and each part of the neshama is part of God, how could there be a higher and a lower in a sense?
You have to learn Perek Beis of Tanya. The answer to your question is Perek Beis. Just in a nutshell, okay, very briefly, when a child is in the process of creation, and the sperm, okay, creates the child, correct, with the mother's help, yeah. Now, from that one seed comes the head of the child, the hands of the child, and the feet of the child. Now, the process is based on the 9 months of pregnancy, in the process of the descent from the 9 months down, so to speak, until the end, that causes the change in the levels of the child. The part of the tibur becomes the head, part of the seed becomes the hands, part of the tibur becomes the toenails. Okay? All neshamas are part of God. All neshamas originate in the world of Atzilus, the highest of the worlds. But it has to come through the four worlds until it gets down here, right? Sometimes it goes on the freeway, sometimes it goes in the local streets. That means, a neshama of Atzilus, like neshamas of Tzadikim, of Rebbes, our neshama of Atzilus means, the neshama starts in Atzilus, and then it just passes through. It's called the freeway, you know, no stops. He goes down from Atzilus down here through the freeway, so he's not affected by the levels along the way. Other neshamas go off the exit at Bria, meaning they're affected by Bria, and then they go the express, the freeway, back to, through the other two worlds.
What does Bria mean in this?
Bria, this, huh?
Not it's not La Brea. Bria is not La Brea.
Bria is not La Brea, no. No, it's not La Brea at all.
Is it a form of matzah bra?
Matzah bra, yeah, matzah bra.
So what is the
Bria? There's four spiritual worlds. There's Atzilus, which means the highest world. Bria is less of a revelation of godliness. Yetzir is less of a revelation. Asiya is less of a relation. I mean, of a revelation of godliness. So it depends. All neshamas originate in the same place. The difference is in the descent of the neshama from up there down here, how it's affected in the worlds along the spiritual worlds along the way. But again, you want more details on Perek Beis of Tanya.
That's not his question.
Huh? That
That's it. Not his question. This was not his question.
She knows.
I know she knows her husband better than he does. Yeah. Yeah.
She knows me better than I do.
That's what I just said. So what is your question? Or should I ask her what your question was?
No,
was that
not
your question, by the way?
Sort of.
Okay, what's his question?
The question is that how something so high can go through the freeway.
On the contrary, the freeway is easy. It's unaffected by the levels along the way.
No, it means can be...
You see, I know him better than you do. That's not what he asked.
It's not the freeway, but it can be dismantled to lower levels.
You guys should go for some counseling to discuss, to get to know each other a little better.
That's why he grew that beard.
Huh?
I'm on overdrive. With
overdrive. Okay.
High.
Okay, let's leave out the Nisham.
Stay high
anyway,
in this one. You stay high in here.
Anyway, bottom line is that that's why in the two sons of Yosef, which are Menashe and Ephraim, which symbolize the Jewish person coming into the world, the Yisimcha, Lakim, Kephraim, Menashe, all these types of things, because Ephraim is the ultimate purpose, but in order to come to Ephraim, you need Menashe. So Menashe is born first, but the ultimate purpose, the right hand, so to speak, is the level of Ephraim. Okay.
Rabbi, it's interesting that in all this time, you haven't once mentioned the name of their mother.
We did. Last week we learned.
Oh.
Asnas, you weren't here.
Marty's not here for a long time.
I know. No, don't harp on it. Vatichlena. Leave it go.
Welcome, Marty.
Okay. Pasik nun gimel. Vatichlena sheva shnei asava. The 7 years of hunger began. The 7 years of plenty ceased, stopped. Ashahoya Beretz Mitzrayim, which were in the land of Mitzrayim. Now, the Mefarshim ask, why does it say Asher Hoya? Hoya is singular. Why doesn't it say Asher Hoyu? So they write that it's a collective thing. The Radak writes, all 7 years we looked at one entity. Because in the dream, it was like one entity, 7 years of good and 7 years of bad. So it was like one entity of the 7 years of good. Now, what it says also over here, Asher Hoya Beretz Mitzrayim, which was in Egypt. Why does the Pasuk emphasize which was in Egypt? So the Mefarshim explained, because the abundance was only in Egypt. So the Pasuk is emphasizing there was no abundance anywhere else in the world. The abundance was not only in Mitzrayim. Now it began, Shava Shnei Harav Lovei, the 7 years of hunger to come. And as the Mefarshim explained, it was so noticeable because it was like a cold turkey break. It wasn't a gradual famine. All of a sudden, the Nile stopped overflowing. All of a sudden, nothing grew. All of a sudden, the hunger began. It wasn't like a gradual thing, the Mefarshim said. It began immediately. And that's why it says Vatchilena. What does it say, Vatchilena? Vatchilena comes from the word chole, sick. It's taka an inyan of sickness to the crops. The crops became sick. Even what grew became immediately sick. So it's like an instant hunger that began.
How come in the former pasuk it's spelled with a
chaf? It's two different words. One is ending, one is beginning. It's two opposite words. Vatichlana means it ended with a chaf, and with a ches means it begins. Tchila. Yeah.
Rabbi Shusterman, wouldn't that be an opportunity time for the people who are not believing in the God of Joseph, believe in this God and want to know more about him?
Yeah. But we'll soon learn that when they came to Yosef and Yosef told them all to circumcise themselves, they had a very hard time with it. We'll see in a few psukim. Okay, the 7 years of hunger began immediately. Kasher Amar Yosef, like Yosef said, Vayhi Rav B'chol Ha'aretz, it was in hunger in all the lands. Okay, and the Mefarshim explained Taka that this, as Yosef said, was the total verification of Yosef's interpretation. I mean, because Yosef said two parts of the dream, it's going to be a plenty and hunger. So now this like verified and validated Yosef's interpretation of the dream. It was a hunger in all the lands, and as the Rashbam says, Ababinel says, even from the stored food was also a hunger. I mean, everything went bad. Now, in the land of Egypt, there was bread. Now, there's an argument over here amongst the commentaries. What does it mean that there was a hunger in all the lands? Does it mean around the world? Or does it mean only in the lands which were around Mitzrayim? So the Ramban learns, B'chol ha'aratzis are only the lands which were immediately around Mitzrayim. All the other lands did not have a famine. Other Mepharshim learn, it was all over the world. B'chol ha'aratzis does it mean simply in all the land. Yet, in the land of Egypt there was bread. Why was there bread? Because Yosef stored up the food and that didn't spoil and Yosef had it.
It was enough for the whole world?
Yeah. Yeah, well, whoever came to Egypt had plenty of food. Even though we'll learn later, the Medrash says Yosef put certain restrictions on the food because he wanted to make sure his brothers came down. Like first, Yosef said, you can't send servants to get food. You can only get food for yourself, you can't buy food for anybody else. Why? Because Yosef's ultimate goal was to get his brothers to all come down. Now if you're able to sell it to servants, the brothers wouldn't come down, they'd send down their servants. Or one brother would go buy for everybody. And that's not what Yosef wanted. Yosef wanted, we'll soon learn the shtick he made, it was unbelievable shtick, the Yosef made to make sure that he's going to know his brothers are going to be forced to come down, plus he's going to know when they come down. You have to sign your names and your father's name and your grandfather's name, and you only allow a certain amount. I mean, he did such shtick for one purpose, that the brothers should come down and he should see them.
Why?
Because Yosef had to fulfill the dreams of the brothers coming to bow to him.
His dream.
His dream, yeah. It was a prophecy, like we learned, that Yosef had to had an obligation to see that it becomes fulfilled.
Prophecy is something that comes true by God, not by
evil. Yeah, but Yosef had to make sure that it was going to happen.
Oh.
Okay, Vatirav kol eretz Mitzrayim, the whole land of Egypt hungered. And Rashi says, if they had food, why did they hunger? Because Yosef decreed that everybody's food should rot. And everybody, except his, what he stored from the government, all the private people that stored food, they didn't have any food left.
What do you mean he decreed?
Huh?
He prayed for it?
He says Yosef made a gzeira. Rashi says, not here, but later, Rashi says, why? Because this is all part of, we'll soon see. Let's get into it, we'll see what Yosef wanted over here.
There's a lot to do with that?
This is a lot to do with the bitter hanitzutzes. We'll see. All the grain, everything became moldy, the bread in the baskets, everything went bad. Okay, now when was this? The Medrash says this was in the second year of the hunger. The first year everybody had food. In the second year, this story is going on now in the second year of the hunger. They all came to Pari for bread. So the question, why are they coming to Pari? Why didn't they go to Yosef? So Rashi comments in the Medrash very simply. They all did go to Yosef. Yosef said, you guys want food? You got circumcise yourself. They said, what, are you crazy? So they ran to snitch to Pari. So Pari, the Medrash says, said to them, what's your problem? Why didn't you store food? Why didn't you store food? So they said, we did store food, but it all rotted. So they said, oh, Yosef made it rot. So if you don't listen to him, he's going to make you die too, so you better listen to him.
Why did Yosef want
that? Oh, we're going to soon learn, why did Yosef... Well, so there's a bunch... We'll get to him in 1 second. There was a reason that Yosef wanted all the Egyptians to circumcise themselves. We'll soon see. Okay, V'yemir Pari chol Mitzrayim l'chu al Yosef. So Pari said, listen, you want food, go to Yosef. Whatever he tells you, you are going to have to listen. His word is final. Even Pari said, I don't have control. Whatever Yosef says, he has a total authority. Now, as Rashi says, they have to circumcise themselves. Now,
do we know which pharaoh this is?
Which? I don't know. I don't know.
One of the 2 feet near a Pharaoh.
No, that was a later one. Moshe's Pharaoh is the midget. Yeah. Okay. Now, the question is twofold. First of all, let's go the second way first. Why did the Egyptians hesitate to circumcise themselves? No, the answer is very simple. No!
They know from the brothers.
They know from Shechem already what happened. They knew Yosef was a Jew. They knew it was an Ivri. Right? They knew this Jewish shtick. They knew that Shimon and Levi told the whole city to circumcise themselves, and then they killed out the whole city. So Yosef said, the people were scared, maybe Yosef, this Jew, is going to do the same thing to us. So Pari said to them, fools, why would he want to kill you? He's the leader of your country. Why would he want to kill you? He's not going to want to kill you. But the Mefarshim asked Taka, why Taka did Yosef want that everybody should circumcise themselves? So one answer is that not to convert the Egyptians, or that they should do the mitzvah. Yosef knew that the Egyptians normally would mock Jews that they were circumcised and they weren't. And therefore Yosef knew that his brothers are going to be laughed at. And the Egyptians are going to look down at them, so it's because you're circumcised and we're not. So Yosef wanted to make everybody equal, that nobody should be able to start up with his brothers, and the Egyptians won't complain. That's one interpretation. According to the Rambam, some poskim write that the Egyptians were offshoots of Keturah, and they were obligated to do a bris milah because they were children of Avram. And Yosef wanted to make sure, now that he had the power to do it, he had to make sure that the goyim kept their mitzvah that they had to keep, so they had to circumcise themselves. Another one is that
how old Egyptian was named
Korah?
What happened to others?
He said they were intermingled with the Egyptians, and therefore the descendants of Keturah, which were intermingled with the Egyptians, were obligated to circumcise. And Yosef knew that these people had to be circumcised, according to Allah. But Rashi basically, I mean, the simple reason of it is the most Mefarshim say, that the brothers shouldn't feel different than the Egyptians to embarrass the brothers. The hunger hit the face of the entire land. That simply means on all the faces of the earth. The Madras says, what does it mean on the face of the what do you mean the face? On the wealthy people, on the leaders of the country, the hunger had its effect already. Pnei Haaretz means the faces, and everybody looks towards them. Now, it says, some Mefarshim say, why did it affect the rich more than the poor? It's very simple. The poor never ate too much. So there's a hunger, so it's not as noticeable as the wealthy people that always eat delicacies and all of a sudden there's nothing to eat. Like you read in the Kamsa Bakamsa story with this rich lady of Yerushalayim that she ended up with nothing to eat. So for the rich people, it hits harder than for the poorer people. Okay. So what happened? Yosef opened up all the containers, and he opened up, he gave food. He sold it to the Egyptians. What do you mean he sold it to the Egyptians? He sold everybody. He sold the Egyptians first. They had the first rights, because it was their country. And the hunger became very strong by its Mitzrayim in the land of Egypt. Meaning, every kind of food, in addition to bread, was spoiled, or the hunger hit it. Rabbeinu Bachai says another thing. What does it mean the hunger was strong? It says already there was a hunger. So Rabbeinu Bachai, or Bachi, whichever way you pronounce it, it says whatever they ate didn't fill them up either, which is another type of a curse, so to speak. They ate, they had food to eat, but it didn't fill them, didn't satisfy them, so they were still hungry. So it wasn't only a hunger. It was vayechza karov. It was even a stronger hunger that even when you ate, you didn't feel full. So it was even worse.
It's like junk food.
Yeah, you are what you eat.
You are what you eat.
Was that because of the thing with Joseph cursing the...
Huh?
I don't think he owns the company anymore.
What Was there no rain? Was that what was going on as far as the famine? There was no.
Well, Egypt normally was not fed by rain. It was normally the Nile overflowed. The Nile stopped overflowing. Everything rotted. It was. Listen, Hashem made a hunger. It was a hunger. That was it. Why did Hashem make a hunger? I'll tell you why Hashem made a hunger. Before we get further into this issue.
In general or in this story?
In this story, why did Hashem make a hunger?
To bring the Jews
to Egypt. Mm-hmm. But there's much more than that. Why did Hashem have to bring the Jews to Egypt? He could have brought Yosef back home to Canaan. I mean, to make the Shidduch, he could have brought Yosef home to Canaan. No. Because we learned that the purpose of creation is to refine all the sparks of Kedusha that fell down into the world from the Shviras HaKelim, from the broken vessels of the worlds of Tehu. Now, what Yosef actually accomplished is that all the money of the civilized world at that time ended up in Egypt. And when the Jews left Egypt after the 210 years and they emptied out Egypt, they basically elevated most of the sparks of Kedusha, of the Nitzutzes of Kedusha, of the entire civilized world. Like we discussed already in the past, from all 288 sparks that fell into the world, they went out of Egypt with Erev Rav, Reish Beis, they went out elevating 202 sparks from 288. There's only 86 left, which is Elohim. So what happened was, by having the hunger and forcing the whole world to come to Mitzrayim with all their money, and not only will we learn later the money finished and they have to give the fields and they have to give everything to Pare, that when the Jews left Egypt they were able to elevate all those sparks of Kedusha that were there in the world at that time. And that was why what Hashem made it happen.
So those 86 are when?
From then until Mashiach. But in 210 years going out of Egypt, they elevated 202 sparks, because that had to be as a preparation to Matan Torah, okay, to elevate the world. And this is all part of the process.
Why is forbidden to go to the world?
It's not forbidden. They're not in Egypt then. No, they're all over the world. On the contrary, you're not allowed to go back to Egypt because there's no more sparks to elevate there.
It's not in Egypt.
No, it's around the world. What? One second. What?
He said that Hashem dried up the Nile.
Not dried up the Nile. It didn't overflow its banks. They didn't dry up.
Oh, really? I'm just wondering, couldn't he have made a miracle like when they threw the Jewish babies into the river and...
No, he didn't make the Nile dry up. Hashem didn't make the Nile overflow to irrigate the land, that's all.
Oh, okay.
So, Paro still needed a bathroom later on, so Hashem didn't want to take away the Nile from him. It says he went to the bathroom in the Nile. Okay. V'chol ha'aretz bo Mitzrayimah, the whole land came to Egypt, and again, whether it refers to the whole world or the countries that we discussed around Egypt. Right. And based on this, yeah.
Where is Tehu? Is not one of the four worlds you talk about?
No, Tehu is higher than the four worlds. Tehu is after the Tzimtzum, before Atzilus.
It's higher than Atzilus?
Yeah. Atzilus is Tikkun already.
Do we know where the 86 Kedushas that are left in the...
Wherever a Jew ends up, that's where sparks of Kedusha are to elevate.
Jews all over the world.
Right. Right.
Los Angeles.
Right. Right. Okay, Chol Ha'aretz Bo Mitzrayimah Lishbar Al Yosef, to buy food to Yosef. Ki Chazak Harav B'Chol Ha'aretz, the hunger became strong in all over the place. The adjacent countries are all over the world, depending on the various opinions that we said. Okay, now, after Yosef ascertained, it says in the Mefarshim, after Yosef ascertained that the hunger was all over the world, that's when he started feeding the world. But like this, he only took care originally of the Egyptians. Okay, now it says in the Pasuk, V'yar Yaakov, Yaakov saw, Ki Hashever b'Mitzrayim, simply means there were provisions in Egypt. All the commentaries ask, what do you mean he saw? How did he see? How did he see? So that
on CNN.
CNN, yeah. It's good. You saw it.
Mashiach times.
How did Yaakov see the so the Mefarshim learn is very interesting, different. Number one, like the Radak learned very simply, he saw travelers coming back with food, and he said, "Where are you coming from?" From Egypt, because there's a lot of food. So Yaakov saw that there was food in Egypt. Not that he was there, but he saw from the travelers. But most Mefarshim, Rashi says it was really he saw in prophecy. Mm-hmm. And therefore he learned Shever does not only mean food, but it also means Sever, which was hope. He saw all of a sudden in his prophecy that there's hope of getting Yosef back. Most Mefarshim learn that the word he saw is like when you understand something, you say, oh, I see. It doesn't mean literally that you're seeing, it's figuratively that you're seeing, meaning you understand. So Yaakov heard, and like it says, does not, it's mental perception, you know, and because in the next pasuk, Yaakov says to his children, I've heard in two psukim, Shamaiti ki yashever b'mitzum. I heard that there's food in Egypt. He didn't say, I saw that there's food in Egypt. So here it means the mental perception that he saw, so to speak, that he understood. Before we go further, there's a very famous story with Alter Rebbe. When Alter Rebbe was taken to prison in the pre-Yutas Kislev story, he got out Yutas Kislev, but when he was taken to prison right after Sukkot, the Alter Rebbe sent different people to do different things. And one of the things he told one of us Hasidim to do was to go to the Levi Yitzchak Obadichev with a kvittel, you know, a pan, to ask for a bracha from the Levi Yitzchak Obadichev. So the Obadichever asked the chassid a few questions. Then he asked the chassid, what's the Alter Rebbe's mother's name? You need a bracha, you know, your name and your mother's name. See, they knew his name was Shneir Zalman, but they didn't know the mother's name. So the Obadichever says to this chassid of the Alter Rebbe, what's the Alter Rebbe's mother's name? So the chassid said, I'll tell you the truth, I don't know. So the Beditcher had a chumash on the table, and he opened up the chumash to this pasuk, Vayar Yaakov ki yashever b'mitzrayim, and he said, Shever stands for Shneir ben Rivka. Shneir ben Rivka, the Alter Rebbe's mother, Shtaka right, the Alter Rebbe's mother's name was Rivka. Obviously it could have been Rachel, but he knew that the name was Shneir ben Rivka, but there's like this whole thing over here, Ki Hashever ben Mitzrayim, that there's hope, so to speak, for that issue. Yaakov saw, and as the Mefarshim explain here in great length, at the present time, Yaakov had plenty of food. Yaakov had food, first of all, it's questionable if the hunger at this time hit the land of Eretz Yisrael, but regardless, later on it obviously did, but Yaakov Avinu still had plenty of food in the house. And he wasn't afraid that they didn't have food, according to most opinions. And therefore Yaakov says to the sons, V'yayim Yaakov Levanov, Yaakov said to his sons, Lama Tisro, why are you making yourself conspicuous? There are Mefarshim that learn, why are you afraid to go to Egypt? But then, that's a lot of Mefarshim learn. But then he asked in the Hebrew, it's grammatically incorrect. Because then it says, Lama Tiyaru, it's supposed to say. Tis Yaru or Tirau, it should have said. Tirau or Tis Yaru. But so many Mefarshim learn, and Rashi learns like that, Lama Tisro, why are you making yourself conspicuous to the children of Esav and the children of Yishmael, Rashi says. So the obvious question is, why does Rashi pick those two? Esav and Yishmael. Nobody had food. The land of Canaan didn't have food. So Rashi says, Esav and Yishmael are our cousins. But they're our cousins. So they're going to be the ones that are going to say, hey, how come you guys have food and we don't? The other guy, we're not going to mix in, you know. You have food. I mean, it's none of our business. But the Mishpacha, you know, they always mix in right away, the family. Family is the first to mix in. Maybe they get it from this pasuk, to mix in the first. So they're mixing in and they're saying, hey, why are you showing yourself? Now, Rashi says, number one, even though they had food, but they didn't want to bring evil and envy and jealousy and so on. Another thing is, the land of Canaan did have food, and therefore there was no problem. Some people say they also lacked food, but they're not going to be jealous unless if they're family. Okay, so therefore he says, why do you have to show off to make people jealous? Some of Farshim learned the following. Some of Farshim learned that Yaakov said to the kids before, go down to Egypt. Yaakov said to the kids, go down to Egypt. And the brothers didn't want to. Because every time somebody went down to Egypt, they had problems. Avram went down to Egypt, Parah took away Sarah. Yitzchok went down to Egypt, he took away Rivka. I mean, every time, you know, they always had problems going down to Egypt. So the brothers were afraid to go down to Egypt. But Yaakov says to them, why are you making yourself conspicuous? You have to go down. Some of Farshim learn that the brothers started looking at each other like, you go, you go. But they weren't able to do that because Yosef, like we said before, made up that only you could only get food for yourself. You can't buy food for anybody else. There's an interesting story in Purim Tavshin Chavov, Purim 1966. It was a very historic Purim in New York by the Rebbe. When the Rebbe finished the Fabring, and he gave a lot of the members of the yeshiva staff, Dan Holler, full cups of mashke, and he got them drunk. I mean, it was unbelievable. Anyway, the Rebbe was left at the Fabrengen with a little bit of mashke left in a bottle. And the Rebbe said, the expression what it says in Shulchan Aruch by Purim, "Kol ha-peshit yad neisnim lei." Whoever sticks out his hand is going to get. The Rebbe looked at the bottle. I was there. I was a kid then, but I remember the Fabrengen very clearly. And the Rebbe said, "Kol ha-peshit yad neisnim lei." And there's a little bit of mashke left. So all of a sudden, was an unbelievable sight. The guy started piling up, jumping 10 layers high of people to try to get mashke from the Rebbe. And they finished that bottle and they brought more bottles, and it was basically in a normal situation, would be a dangerous situation to be at the bottom of 10 people on top of you, and probably not skinnier than you either. And you know, and that. So in middle, there's a guy. And then the Rebbe continued later, when he went out to the car, and the people were on top of the car, they flattened all four tires, they're about to go in a different car. It was a whole interesting, but that's what I want to bring out. It was an interesting Purim. But over there, there are people that were afraid to go, because they were afraid to get tramped, killed, whatever. So a guy went twice. So the Rebbe said to him, in Yiddish, the Rebbe said, "You took already." So he said, "I'm taking for somebody else." So the Rebbe said in Yiddish, "Why doesn't he come himself?" So the Rebbe said, the guy answered, "He's afraid." So the Rebbe said, "He's afraid, let him not get." You know, there's certain things, what I'm bringing out of it, certain things you got to bring yourself. You have to do it yourself. Yosef wanted, as the Gemara has an expression, mitzvah bo yosem b'shlucho. Even though many times you could send a shliach to do something for you, but it's a mitzvah to do it by yourself, preferable than doing it through a shliach. The real reason Yosef wanted, as we mentioned before, he wanted all the brothers to come down. He didn't want servants. He wanted to see the brothers. He wanted to see if they did tshuva. He wanted to see what Tal Yaakov is doing. He wanted to see, you know, get rid of this ban, like we learned last week that he was banned, that he can't tell Yaakov he's alive, and so on and so forth. So Yosef made it in such a way that it's going to be forcing everybody to come down.
But Benjamin didn't come.
Right, but that's why he made him come. Eventually, Yosef made him come. Vayomer Yaakov, Vayomer, he said, okay, let's see one more pasuk. He said in pasuk beis, Vayomer, he said, in a Shemite, he tells his sons the following. I see, ki Hashavah b'Mitzrayim, that there's food in Egypt. Radusham, or like Yaakov, in the deeper sense, he says, I see there's hope in Egypt, because eventually Yosef was going to come home. Radu Shama, go down there. And like Rashi says, it doesn't say Luchu Shama, go there. So simply the reason is because Egypt is lower than Eretz Yisrael. Whether physically or spiritually is a debate. But Eretz Yisrael is greater, holier for sure, and Egypt is a descent. Like Vayeded Avram Mitzrayim. So he says, go down. But Rashi also brings down that Redu equals 210, and Yaakov prophesied that the Jews are going to go for 210 years to Egypt. V'shivu l'shon l'anu misham, and buy food from there. V'nichya, and we will live, v'lay namus, and we won't die. What's the double expression, we'll live and we won't die? It means redundant. If you live, you're not going to die. You're not going to die, you're going to live. He meant physically and spiritually. Because Yaakov already foresaw that if any of his kids die in his lifetime, he's not going to have Olam Haba. So now by prophesizing, we'll go down. Not only won't we die physically, but v'nichya, we will also live spiritually in Gan Eden. Because Yosef is going to come home. And therefore, none of the sons died. If none of the sons died, Yaakov is going to be able to go to Gan Eden. Okay, we'll leave it here.
Yeah. Yeah.